This session that we are embarking on right now is the session on clarity. Sadly, a lot of people, when they see a sermon, it's about as clear as looking at a potsherd of ancient Hebrew on it. And I think some sermons are as clear as ancient Hebrew. The speaker feels that he's or she's clear, but everybody doesn't quite agree. And obviously there are ways you can find out if you actually have been clear or not. You could give a quiz, right? But who gives a quiz at the end of their sermons? So we're going to talk in this session how to preach clearly. How not to give, let's say, mixed messages to people. What would you do if you were approaching a stop sign that looked like this? That might be, I don't think it's Philippines because the gas is 1.46. I think this is in the U.S. somewhere. You know, you can kind of invent whatever you want when you see the stop sign there, and then it all says no stopping anytime. A lot of our messages are like that. And life, if you haven't noticed, is getting increasingly complex. When I see the development of the Apple logo, it reminds me of that. The first logo when Apple computer came out showed Isaac Newton sitting beneath an apple that's about to fall on his head. And look at all the detail on this logo. They actually didn't use that very long. It was only up for less than a year. And then in 1976, they said, well, our name is Apple. Let's just do an apple there. And they put all these different colors on it. I'm not sure what all those colors meant back in 1976, but those, we would recognize those as the colors of the rainbow. And ironically, as Apple became more LGBT friendly, they took all the colors away, and the logo has been just a plain black apple. Since 1998. People have asked him, well, what's a little bite out of the apple for? And it does kind of look like they're trying to be like Eve, you know, buck the system, but they refuse to answer what the little bite out of the apple means. It's a person typing?
Yeah.
So,
person,
side view, typing.
Seriously?
Where's that? You mean this is the person right here?
Yes, yeah, I do.
And the keyboard is the bottom of the apple, the bottom, the curve.
Okay, hang on, let me Google this.
Oh. Natalie, don't get all distracted. All right.
But now it's
that's what we have breaks for. Let me tell you about Doolittle's point of no return. A little World War II history here. You are aware that the American fleet was based in Hawaii, right? And yet, the Japanese made their way all the way from Japan over to the Hawaiian Islands undetected and had a surprise attack. There's debate as to whether this really was a surprise attack. But anyway, I'll stay out of all that debate, letting them actually bomb our base. All four carriers, by the way, aircraft carriers were out of Pearl Harbor at the time of the attack, which is more than just suspicious. But anyway, so the U.S. population was very, very demoralized. And the leadership felt like they really need to strike right at the heart of Japan to show, even if it wasn't going to be strategic, it would be strategic for the morale of the American people. And so Captain Tommy Doolittle, after the invasion on the 7th of December 1941, he cooked up a plan to go all the way and to actually bomb Tokyo itself. Now, the planes couldn't fly that far back then, not like today, not like stealth fighters that can fly from the U.S., bomb in the Middle East, and then come back and land in the U.S. all in one raid. But their plan was to have the carriers, the aircraft carriers, bring these B-25 bombers close to Japan and then go in, bomb Tokyo, and then make their way back to the ship and then head on back to Japan. But their actual carrier route didn't actually reach that far where they could actually do the raid. The fleet was discovered by the Japanese, by a submarine. And the submarine, best I could tell, had radioed back to Japan that the entire fleet was on its way. And the fleet would have been absolutely devastated had they continued the route. So they had two choices. One of them was to turn around there and go back to Hawaii, or to send the B-25s in, bomb Tokyo, and not be able to make it back to the ships, because the ships would have turned around and headed back to Hawaii and find some kind of landing strip or field or something in China, which was occupied by the Japanese at that time. You can see it in the movie Pearl Harbor, some of the details of that. Well, what's the point here? You never want to be in a plane that's flying and doing a bombing raid, and once you drop your bombs, you have less than one half tank of gas left. Because that means you're going to die. You're going to turn around and you're going to try to make it back to the ship, and you're not going to make it. So it's called the point of no return. When you're flying planes, it's a very, very important principle to follow. Never have your bombing raid when you have less than a half tank of gas, because it'll be your last bombing raid, you know. Well, we have a point of no return when it comes to studying, let's say, in books and listening to sermons as well. But it's different when we think about how it relates to books as opposed to sermons. And I try to illustrate this on page 67, because it goes like this. When you're reading, and you guys do a lot of reading for your various assignments, let's suppose you have 21 pages to read on an assignment, all right? You go through, you catch the subject around page 2 or 3, you catch the first main point, you kind of miss the second main point of the article, but then eventually you get to the main idea, right? If you get to the end, you say, boy, I don't think I caught the second point. What do you do? What do you do? Yeah, you kind of turn around, you flip back in your book, and you get where that second major point was, and you fill it in. So you have this complete picture of whatever the article is trying to communicate. It's not the same in preaching, though. Let's suppose you hear a message, and instead of 21 pages there, we've got 21 minutes. You catch a little bit, and then you get distracted for a little bit. Maybe you're looking up the Apple logo history or something like that, and you kind of miss a little bit in the sermon. And you go for a little bit. You catch pretty much what the speaker's saying, but you realize there's a few gaps there. You've actually missed the subject because maybe you got a text on your phone or something like that, and you missed the speaker was actually, maybe it wasn't so clear. But maybe it was clear, but you weren't actually paying attention. You did get the first main point, but you kind of missed that second main point, just as perhaps you would do when you're reading. So what do you do then? You get the main idea. You get the basics of the sermon, but do you really have a full understanding of the sermon? You don't, right? So what do you do? You make sure you've recorded it. Exactly. Very few of us are recording sermons, though, that we go through. And you can listen on the website. Maybe later on you can catch it if your church records the sermons and puts those up there in video or audio. The point being, as a speaker, we want to be as clear as possible with the main points that we want to bring across. Everybody's not going to catch 100% of what we say, but we do want them to catch the key points that we want to bring out. Those key points being the subject. What are we actually talking about? And maybe, let's say, if we've got 2 points in our sermon, we want them to grasp that, and we want them to grasp the main idea. So there's, let's say, 4 sentences there, and you may be speaking 21 minutes, but at least those 4 sentences, you really want them to grasp, because if they don't grasp that, then they're not going to be able to apply it to their life, and they're not going to see their lives change at all as a result of it. There's a point, there's a difference here between reading versus listening. And I highlight this on page 28, at least part of it. And you feel free to turn to page 28, where we go back to our overview of the whole 7-step preaching process. My point here, halfway through page 28, is this: to plan for oral clarity. Remember that you know the sermon in outline form, but your listeners don't. So the preacher says, for example, he brings up a subject in his message. Well, he knows that he actually has only 2 major points to develop that, 2 main points, and then he's going to give the main idea. He knows that on that first one, he's going to develop that a bit more. He's going to really develop point B, because he has 2 subpoints under that. That's what you know. Let's say you've got a 2-point sermon. It looks pretty clear to you, because after all, you've spent, by the time I get to this point, I'm normally spending at least 7 hours or so on my sermon. That would be pretty clear to me. But here's what the people heard. They didn't hear it quite that way. What they heard is subject 1, A, B, Arabic 1, Arabic 2, Roman numeral 2, main idea. That's what they heard. Why is that? Why did they not hear what the preacher said?
No transitions.
Because there's not transitions between those.
They don't have the visual.
What's the nature of it? The nature of speaking is linear, right? But visuals are not linear. Visuals, you can catch a lot without a word said, whether that visual be a picture or whether that visual be an outline. So the question is, how do we resolve this? How do we let people understand the difference between the major points and the minor points of our message? I mean, you want them to catch that, right? Sometimes you can get through a sermon and somebody will come up to you and say, "Oh, I caught what you said," and they make some bizarre thing and you say, "What? My sermon wasn't about that." "No, but you said," and you made some passing comment, and they think that's really the whole point of your whole sermon. If that's the case, probably what has happened is you haven't, let's say, repeated key points. Dr. Desmond's very good about this, and in his class, and he'll probably help you with this when you have his teaching. He's good about repeating actually the main idea several times in a message. So when he preaches, he's quite clear in this regard. So if you repeat the key points throughout your message, then people will grasp it. I suggest repeating that subject several times. Every time you give a main point, review the subject before you give the main point. It's one way to be actually really clear. Restate the key points as well. Let's say your main points. Say your main point slowly and then restate it. Go into it with the subject, state it, and then restate it. Does that make sense? Let's see if I can illustrate it. What is the first way that we can speak properly to non-Christians? Well, speak graciously. Make sure that the way you speak is full of like honor for God and honor for that person in terms of how you actually say what you say. Do you see what I just did? I gave you three sentences. The first was what? The subject, yes. The second was the main point, very short, speak graciously. And the third was a restatement of that main point. I find that when I do that, when I'm preaching, people will say, ah, this makes sense. I understand this. So if you restate those key points, then people will discern the difference between your main points and your subordinate points. They'll realize, oh, he just stated that question, then he said it again or said it in different words. I think that's the subject. That's what this sermon's about. And then if you did the same thing on the first main point and the second main point and your main idea, the people will grasp it. I like what Haddon Robinson says. He says, a mist in the pulpit is a fog in the pew. What does that mean?
If it's unclear to the preacher, it's more infinitely more.
Very good. If it's unclear to the preacher, it's infinitely more unclear to those in the audience. So you better know really what you're trying to say. If you get these horrified looks about what you say, you probably haven't been very clear about what you said, and perhaps the problem is that you're not really clear about your own viewpoint. And so clarity should be a priority for us, but we often do not work hard on being clear. Yes, Nellie. You do exactly what you just said. If you know there are different viewpoints, you be fair with other people, not condescending toward them. And you say there are different viewpoints on this passage. And then and you state what you say with humility. But people also want to know why you believe what you believe. So support your perspective, but do so with a sense of humility. In my other class, I've been teaching on speaking in tongues, the role of women in the church, and a host of other things in 1 Corinthians the last few weeks. I hope that, I hope they agree with me, but I know they don't agree with me. But I hope that what they do catch from me is humility and fairness with other perspectives, because these are very controversial areas. So, but a lot of times when it comes to issues that are controversial, we're afraid to be clear. And we try to walk this very, very tight rope where we don't offend anybody. I think it's better to give people the scripture, your best understanding of the scripture. You know, I told one of my other students today, I said, you know, I gave you guys 12 different viewpoints on this particular passage. Normally when I do something like that, I've held to all those views. Not always, but a lot of times I've held to, let's say, when I present four views on divorce and remarriage, I've held to all four of them at different times in my life. And my understanding of scripture develops and changes, and so I end up changing my perspective on it. That's helpful. I think it's comforting to people to realize, oh, well, you used to hold this particular view I hold right now, but maybe you've changed. I wonder why you changed. That's a great question to ask. It's good for us to bring that up in our preaching. Did you guys have a question, Peng, or no?
Let's see if you notice something that you're not very certain.
Okay, if you're not certain about something.
You're not very certain. So do you want to carry on, or do you maybe give a miss, give a pass?
You could give a pass on it because you're not certain on it. It may not be a very important matter, and obviously you can't say everything you need to say in a passage anyway, so it may not be important to cover it. But if it's important, let's say you're preaching on Psalm 23, And it says, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You go, boy, I've really struggled with this. I'm not sure if dwell in the house of the Lord forever, if that means David was saying, I want to be there at the tabernacle the rest of my life, or is he actually saying, I am just so looking forward to being in the presence of the Lord. I'm not really sure. But in any case, David had a future hope. He had you could express both perspectives. Or you could say, I'm not sure what David meant when he said, you anoint my head with oil. You anoint my head with oil in the presence of my enemies. Is he changing the imagery here to being a banqueting victor who has the oil on his head? Or is he still a sheep? You know, I'm not so sure which way to go on this. But I know that there's just this, David had this sense of blessing. And that's certainly what we want. We may not want oil on our heads, but we want, and we don't need a victory over our, say, physical enemies trying to take our lives like David had. But you can draw take a middle of the ground perspective on it where you get the main point of what he's saying. I wouldn't recommend doing that over and over, though. I recommend digging deeper and coming to a perspective on it, but then saying, others disagree on this.
What I feel is that if the person is not certain, then the explanation wouldn't be clear. It comes out in the form.
If a person's not certain, he could clearly designate two different perspectives, though. It may not be clear to him, but he could say, there's this view and then there's this view. I could say, I'm not sure what my view on in what cases a person should divorce, can divorce. But one option is only for adultery. Another option is adultery and desertion. So I'm not sure which way, I need to study that a little bit more. I think people need to hear us preach and say, I'm not sure about that one. I'm still growing, still developing on that. Natalie? Yeah?
No, I was thinking that you can fail to come to a conclusion, but not because you failed to understand the different points of view. It could just be that the weight on both sides seems fairly equal to you, that at this point you don't know where to stand.
Sunday morning comes whether you're ready or not. And you may need more time to actually study the passage. But there's times when I've just told my congregation, I need more time to look at this, to come to a perspective on this. I don't know. I think they appreciate me saying I don't know. Don't do it in a doctoral exam, though. I said I don't know 3 times in 2 hours, and then I failed it, But, but anyway, at the church, it's okay, Okay, so let's look at clarity. Back to page 67. How do you actually do this? How can you be clear when you're speaking? I'm going to do this in a few points here. Clarity throughout your sermon. Clarity in the introduction. Clarity in the body, and then clarity in the conclusion. All right, going into page 68. Here's how to see if you're clear throughout the message. Make sure your introduction subject, there in your introduction, it flows. Make your introduction subject flow to each MP right to the MI. Let's check, see if that happens. Let's see. Today, we're going to see how to speak to unbelievers properly. I want to see, is main point one going to answer that? Speak graciously. Does that answer how to speak to believers properly? Yeah, it does. Partly. Speak purely, second main point. And then speak appropriately. Okay, here's a 3-point sermon. 3 things to keep in mind how to speak to unbelievers clearly. And then at the end, I wrap it up and actually sum up the compliments, or sum up the main points as compliments. Speak gracious, pure, and appropriate words to each unbeliever. I could take those 3 points and sum them up with some other word that sums them all up. Properly would matter would do it, but that wouldn't make sense as a main idea, would it? Well, today we're going to see how to speak to unbelievers properly. Well, speak proper words to unbeliever. You know, they're going to look and go, did you think that through? The way to speak properly is to speak properly? So it's helpful to see it all on one page and to say, I'm promising something here at the beginning. Did I actually fulfill the promise at the end? You'd be surprised how many sermons don't hang together like that. And if it doesn't hang together, when you write it out, it's not going to hang together when you speak it. It's not going to become clearer. It's going to be more foggy to your listeners. So how do you actually do that? Let's look at the introduction. How are you clear in the introduction? There's different ways to do that. One of them is to emphasize each key sentence by either repeating it, that's using the same words, or restating it. That means using different words. Yes?
Sorry, out of curiosity, because usually with the format that we're using to write out the main points, right? We're being very particular about the words we're using. So if we restate something using different words, do you find that sometimes it confuses things? Because, for example, if I'm trying to explain what graciously is, and then I use a whole bunch of synonyms, I'm also making the assumption that this means the same thing.
The synonyms that you use, and that really is what we're talking here on the second one, restating, those synonyms clarify it for the listeners. If you say, speak graciously, well, that's still kind of ambiguous.
Right.
You guys struggled with this on your assignment. Some of you said, that means you speak about the grace of God. That's what graciously means. Some of you thought in terms of content. Here's the content. You talk about God's grace. That's what speak graciously means. I'm not sure you were right on that. I think it's more of the manner in which you speak. But then what does it mean, the manner of being gracious? Well, you show grace toward people of different perspectives. It's helpful to think out what those synonyms might be. To think out my restatements. I write out my restatements. I don't just write my main points. I write out the restatements as well. So that way people can, if they don't catch it when I say it the first time, they may hear it, but they may not catch it. They may hear the word, but they may not understand the concept. But when you give a synonym for it, you state it in different words, generally you're going to lead to more clarity, and people will appreciate that. You can even be clearer by repeating it, using the exact same words, too. Because what that does, even though it doesn't add to the clarity, it does show that this is an important point. Very infrequently do we say something twice unless it's very important. Very infrequently do we say something twice unless it's very important. Do you think that's important? I think so. I just said it twice. All right, good thought. Here's another thing. Clearly lead toward one of these three, and know which one of the three you're going to lead toward, okay? Are you going to be stating your main idea in the beginning of your message? If so, what kind of message is it, structure-wise?
A deductive
message. So I put here on the notes, does the introduction end with a crisp statement of the main idea and thus becoming a deductive sermon? If so, which developmental questions will you raise about the idea? Am I going to explain, prove, or apply this one? You know, if you're going to state a subject, or as Ramesh Richard says, the theme, then you're going to be stating it generally as perhaps a question. Does the introduction end by raising only the subject, most helpfully as a relevant question, an inductive sermon? My sermon for this coming Sunday, I'm going to lead in my introduction toward the question, why should we be accepting of one another despite our differences? Why is that an important thing, first to accept one another? So I want to make sure that it's clear in the listeners' minds that that's the subject. We're asking a why question, and we're and I want them to understand what it means to be accepting of one another. Doesn't mean we accept all of one another's sin. This church has no standards. We accept all sins. But I should be clear about the question I'm actually addressing. But sometimes we're actually bringing the listeners only into the main point, the first main point. Several of you, I had a little conversation with you, I guess you could say, on your last assignment on this one. You said that the point of Colossians 4:6 is why we should speak to unbelievers properly. But then at the beginning of your sermon, you said, how should we speak to unbelievers properly? And you said that was the subject. In reality, it wasn't. You were actually designing a sermon outline to bring people into the first part of the verse. And then later on, you brought up the subject of the passage when you asked the why question. Does that make sense? And so I highlighted that on that particular one. With me? All right, here's another point. Point three here, bottom of 67. Share only relevant background. You're all preparing for your first sermon, and you've got all this stuff in your head, right? All this background to the book you're going to be preaching on and all this stuff. Please don't unload on us all at the beginning of your sermon. You don't have time to do that. You have a 15-minute sermon. You have to think through, well, what is it of that background that's so important? That's what I want to share with the people. And then along with this, the other idea here is give the background before you give the text. So why do we do that? Well, if I come up here and I say, good morning, my sermon today is on 1 Peter 2, verse 2. What are people going to do? They're right when they say that, they're going to start going on their phones. And it used to be you'd open up a Bible and look for 1 Peter 2. And there wasn't anything distracting along the way. But now we look up these verses on our phones. And there's a WhatsApp message, there's a text message, there's a Facebook post, I don't know about you, but all this stuff shows up on my phone, and I have to, sometimes my wife will say, well, did you find it? I go, oh, yeah, that's right, honey, there was a Facebook, there was a WhatsApp, there was a this, there was that, I'm on my way there, you know. And sometimes that happens during the sermon. So people are doing other things, and while they are actually looking for the passage, you are telling valuable information. You're giving the subject of the passage. You're giving the background of the passage. So I think it's better. This is a principle that I was taught by Dr. Don Sanukian, and I'm modifying his notes for this session here. To give the background later on. First, bring the person to the point of saying, "Hey, I need this message. I need to know this." So that's my task for this Sunday. I want everyone to say, let's see, Pastor Rick says, we're to accept one another. Do I do that? Am I actually accepting of people? Who may I not be accepting of in this body? See, I need to draw it out with enough questions, enough things for people to say, I think I actually need this sermon. I think I will listen. And then I go from need to background. And say, well, you may be thinking, yeah, I need to know how to accept other believers. I mean, really accept them. But you know what? The Romans had that problem too. So I move in here to the background to the book of Romans. This Sunday's message is covering the entire book of Romans in one sermon. So I want them to say, wow, the Romans struggled with this. They had Jews and Gentiles living there together in the same congregation, and they had some Jew-Gentile issues. May not be the same that I have, but then I go into the text. Let's say I'm preaching one verse, Romans 12:1 or whatever. In my case, I'm just saying, let's go to Romans 1, and we'll get a run through the book. in any case, doing it that way, need first, then background, then text, will keep the people with you. You express a need, they say, okay, I want to listen to this. You start giving background, and they're listening to you rather than flipping through their phone or their Bible trying to find the actual passage. Once you finish the background, then you say, okay, this is answered in today's text. Let's all turn to Romans chapter 1. At that point, everybody turns together. At that point, you basically kind of pause and restate it. We're in the first chapter of Romans here, and you bide for time a little bit, but you do it in such a way that that they're catching on. This background is really actually all background to Paul's letter to the Roman church. This is the capital of the empire, and these people living in the capital needed to know right in the very first chapter the answer to this Jew-Gentile issue that Paul's going to address in this book. Do you see what I just did? I went for about 40 seconds talking about the fact that we're going to go to Romans 1. Okay, let's look at what it says here. Paul, an apostle of God, you know, you read on through it. Then you're actually getting on into the text. Does that make clear? Did I make sense about making sense here? Okay, what can you do in the body of the message? Now we're on the next page. Well, I mentioned already repetition. This is one of five tools that we'll look at that will lead your listeners through your content so they're actually understanding what you're saying. Repetition is saying the same thing immediately in the same words. So you say, for example, 1 Corinthians 7:10 says that God prohibits divorce. Do you notice how I just said that? Do you notice where I slowed down? On the main point, right? 1 Corinthians 7:10 says that God prohibits divorce. God prohibits divorce. Now, if I say it that way, you're going to say, ah, that's clear. He just said it twice. I think that's important. I think that's like a really important point, a main point there. Or let's say I say, let's see John's point in Revelation 1:7. Revelation 1, verse 7. Now, note, at Revelation, first chapter, Revelation 1, 7, that John says, I've said it three times, and they'll catch it because I've repeated it. All right? Another way would be is speak gracious words. Speak gracious words. Do you do that? That's repetition. That's different from restatement. Restatement uses different words. Let's say you say, speak gracious words. Use enfolding speech. Do you see how I've tried to be clear about what I mean by gracious words here? Instead of saying the word speak, what I'm saying is what? I'm saying talk about speech. All right? Should be like that. Keep the verse up there. Instead of saying gracious, I use the word what? Enfolding. Instead of, well, I guess use is really the restatement of speak, and use words, use speech. But in any case, hopefully, if I said it that way, people say, ah, okay, I'm not sure what he means by gracious, but I think I know what he means by enfolding. I could restate that again. I could say, use the kind of words that draw people in, that don't set up barriers between you and other people. Do you see it? That's gracious. And people respond to gracious speech like that, you know? Yes?
In the manuscript, when you're doing repetition, would you type up speak gracious words twice?
Yeah, I think I would. In the manuscript, I would put it twice if I'm going to say it twice. The other thing I do is I normally, in my manuscript, I don't put the scripture there, but where I'm going to read the scripture, I underline it. I would put 6A and then I'd underline it. So I'd say, speak gracious words. Use enfolding speech. Paul says here, let your words be full of grace. So I'm reading it at that particular point. That way it clues me in actually where I'm going to do it. It seems pretty simple when you're talking about one verse like this. But when you're talking about, oh, here's a paragraph of 20 verses, how much of those 20 verses am I going to read at once? Am I going to read it in parts, or am I going to read it all at once? This kind of clarifies these things for you. All right, let's see if we understand the concept of restatement. Let me give you a couple minutes and go on page 69 through these restatement exercises. I'll go with the first one with you first, okay? S is going to stand for the statement, and then R will stand for restatement. So here we go. God shows his grace by protecting his own people. There's the statement, right? Here's the restatement. God shows his grace to those who belong to him. Would you say, yes, that is a restatement? No? And if it's no, what's the problem with it? All right? What do you think on this one? Let's do it together.
No.
You say no? Why is that no? It says God showing his grace both times. Okay. So the statement is talking about how God shows his grace. What about the so-called restatement? It's to whom he's showing his grace. Who's actually receiving his grace? So this would be a no. It's an attempt to do a restatement, but how God's grace is, how it's shown is not restated. All right? All right, you do the next ones yourself, okay? You can do it with someone next to you if you want to. Is this a restatement or not? I'll do it for you, Margaret. Yeah. Did you finish two?
Yeah.
All right, what do you think?
No.
Okay. No, I would agree with you. These are not restatements. What's the problem?
Israel's trust in God is not present in the restatement.
What has happened with the so-called restatement?
It's only
who's God, this? Who's the
only God?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Doing the action.
Right. The statement here is talking about what Israel's doing. The second one is talking about what God's doing. So the Israelite action has actually changed to God's action. So it's really not a restatement. How about the third one? We should demonstrate our faith by obeying God's ways of help unquestionably. Israelites show their faith by obeying God's unorthodox strategies. Obeying. Unquestioning. Okay, Winston, I see you shaking your head. What do you say, brother?
No.
All right, so you're saying no. And why is this not an actual restatement?
Because the unorthodox strategy is something new.
Unorthodox, yeah, is being added in. That's true. There's another bigger problem than that.
Subject.
How has the subject changed?
From we to Israelites.
Yeah, the we changes to Israelites, so it's not really a restatement. How about number four? If you love God, you'll obey him. That's pretty clear, isn't it? Restatement, obedience and love for God go together. good restatement?
Yes.
All right, we're all in agreement. Yes. Loving God, actually, that's not even restated. It's the word for love is said to be love. The word for obey is said to be obedience, you know. But anyway, yeah. And number five, prayer should be the highest Christian's highest priority. And then your communication with God must come before everything else. So prayer turns into what?
Communication.
The Christians turns into your, assuming you're a Christian, those are restated. Highest priority turns into, yeah, this comes before everything else. So this would be a yes. What you don't want is you don't want people coming to you and say, well, actually, the sermon didn't quite meet my needs. Where can I go to get a refund on my offering? You know. And the restatements are generally more helpful than repetition. Repetition's good, but restatements are better because they enhance the meaning. Repetition, if you're not clear the first time and you say it the second time, speak salty words. I can say that with a lot of emphasis. Speak salty words. I can say it 3 times, 10 times. But if I'm not clear, the people are gonna go, can you kind of give it to me in other words? These words, you keep saying the same unclear thing over and over again. So, another key way to be clear, number 3 here on page 68, is transitions, using transitions. They advance your flow of thought. And I've told you before when we talked about outlining that whatever's in your transition goes here within the parentheses. You don't have to say the word transition there in the parentheses, transition, colon. Just whatever's there, we're going to use this means. So that's actually your transition. And there are different types of transitions, all right? One of them is the rhetorical question. So you say in the transition between the first and the second point, well, what's the second way to speak to non-Christians? You're not actually asking anybody to answer you because it's a rhetorical question. You're just trying to advance the flow of thought. Another way to give a transition is to use a flashback. Well, we saw that we should speak gracious words to non-Christians. Now, speak wise words. You see, I reviewed the previous point there, a flashback to it. And then just give a quick little, now, in other words, I'm about to state another main point here. Now, speak wise words. And people are waiting for me. My congregation is, okay, Pastor Rick, are you going to restate it? And then I do. I'm kind of predictable when I'm on that one. And then they expect me to read the passage, which I normally do at that point, you know. You don't want to be so predictable people don't want to listen to you, but anyway. Another one I like to use is incomplete sentence. It's an incomplete sentence in the transition, but the sentence is completed when you add the main point to it. The second way to speak to non-Christians is to speak wise words. So I put that little pause there. Basically what I'm saying is, do you remember that our subject is we're talking about speaking to non-Christians, ways that we speak to non-Christians? I've just said the second way, meaning we've already covered the first part of this. We're going to move into, I told you earlier that we're going to look at 2 different ways. So we're kind of halfway through the sermon here, and it helps people realize, okay, the sermon is moving along. It will end, you know. Another way to do it, like in the incomplete sentence, you say the first way to speak to non-Christians, the second way to speak to non-Christians, and then they catch on. Look at that. He's talking about how to speak to non-Christians. Should be pretty clear to the listeners when they hear that 3 times, once in the subject and then in both transitions before the main points. They've heard it 3 times. That's the subject. They shouldn't be saying, I think this passage is about how to love your wife. I think this sermon's about you know, how to be nice to your neighbor. No, no, I've told them three times what the subject of the passage is. And so, yeah, we're talking about salty speech here. So those are three different ways so far: repetition, restatement, and transitions, and how to be clear in the body of the message. Another helpful tool is to use keywords, and you use those same keywords throughout the message. A bit like using repetition, but by repetition up above, what I meant was say the same exact sentence two times in a row. This is a little bit different from that, but the idea is to repeat keywords. Let's suppose you're preaching on Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the fear and nurture of the Lord. So you say at the beginning of your sermon, how can you fathers avoid provoking your children to anger? And then your first point is, we should not exasperate them. Okay? And then your second point is, we can avoid this by teaching them. Now you might say, well, that looks pretty clear, right? Does that look clear to you? When you see those three statements up there, one question with two answers immediately following, it probably looks pretty clear to you, right? But there's a lot of words in between those. There's looking up the passage, there's sharing the illustrations, applications, etc. So if my main point is we should not exasperate them, what's unclear about that statement? Yeah, we's not clear. How about them? It's in the main. Now, who's the them again? Who are we talking about exasperating? Oh, you're talking about exasperating your wife, right? No. This passage is not about exasperating your wife. Don't do that either. But anyway, better to not use all those pronouns. We, them, and all that. Better to say, how can you fathers avoid provoking your children to anger? Well, don't exasperate your children. See how much better of a statement that is? I'm talking about children here in my subject. I'm talking about children in my main point. How about the second main point? We can avoid this by teaching them. What's the problem with that? What's the this? Who's the we? Are we talking about parents? Are we talking about mothers? Are we talking about fathers? What is the this? And you could also say, what is the them, too? So it's better to avoid using such words. You can really improve this. Even if you say we can avoid provoking them by teaching them, people are still going to not quite understand it. It's better to bring it on in. Let's say I could do it perhaps with using a incomplete sentence transition. A second way we can avoid provoking our children to anger is teach your children. Now, do you see what we've got here in this structure? Is actually what you find in the passage. The passage tells you what to not to do, and then it tells you what to do. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. That's what not to do. But bring them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. The second part of the verse is positive. So I'm trying to reflect that in my main points here. But I'm using the same key word. I'm talking about children, 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 children. I can even be a little more clear here as to who the we is. I mentioned fathers up here. I could say on my main point first, fathers, don't exasperate your children. Dads, don't exasperate your children. I could probably say a second way that fathers can avoid provoking their children. The second way us dads cannot get our children angry at us. Is hey, let's look up the end of the verse. It says, "Dads, we had to teach our children." Do you catch what I'm saying? So I'm restating this father's idea as well. The last thing in terms of clarity of the body is deductive development. In other words, state your main points deductively. You guys know the difference between inductive and deductive. If you are a deductive preacher, you would typically be more clear. It is a little bit more challenging to be interesting because you state your point and then you're kind of be proving your point. There are times when you want to move on into a point inductively. But generally, preview the conclusion of a point before you begin explaining it. I mean, what value is there in trying to explain something before you've actually stated it? Let's suppose I say to you, let me give you all the reasons. Because your wife is the most important person in your life. I'm talking to you men here. Let me give you all the reasons. You have the longest term ministry with your wife more than anybody else in your life. Now, what's going on in your mind right now? I'm giving you the reasons, right? The reasons for what? I said, you're something about relating to my wife. It's better for me to state the point up front. I'm clear that way. Here's my point. Men, love your wife as Christ loved the church. Okay, there's my point. Now, let me give you some reasons. Your wife is the most important person in your life. I'm actually not preaching the text here. I should get the point from the text. I think what the text says is that your marriage illustrates Christ's relationship with the church. You want to know why you should love your wife? People are looking at you. Non-Christians are looking at you and they're saying, what does Jesus' love for us look like? Oh, I know you and how you love your wife. So anyway, that's the point. Preview the conclusion of a point before you begin to explain. The same thing applies to a verse. Tell the audience the point of the verse or the passage before you read it. So don't say, let's open our Bibles to 1 Corinthians 13. Let's see what Paul says to us. If I speak with tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. What's going on in the minds of the listeners when I do that? What is it about? Yeah, why are you bringing this up? What are you trying to emphasize here? It would be much better for me to give the preview the point of it first. I could say, what do you think is more important? Spiritual gifts or love? What do you think is more important? I hope you say love. This is what Paul says. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but I do not have love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. See, when I do it that way, you know what to look for in the verse, correct? You're asking yourself, let's see. Does this verse actually say that, that love is more important than spiritual gifts? Hey, it actually does. It says love's more important than tongues. And then you read on. Love's more important than prophecy. Love's more important than giving, etc. If I preview the point first, I will be much more clear in the way I present it. In rare cases, when you feel the need to develop the main point inductively, you can put in parentheses on your outline. And I think I've shown you some examples of that. For example, the top of page 39, when church growth problems arise, how should we solve them? The main point, the first main point in this sermon outline is inductively developed, so it's in parentheses. In terms of the order in which you say it, you give the question, how should we solve them? And then we say, well, their church was a growing church, they had a food problem, etc. You're actually skipping over the main point. You're developing that point inductively. By the time you get to the subpoint C, you're giving the exegetical idea, which is, in essence, the main point. So, yeah, there's some examples of that. Okay, clarity in the conclusion. We'll have a whole session on conclusion, but repeat the subject in the conclusion. This is normally how I'll go on into the conclusion. I'll say, now remember today, we're talking about this question. We're answering this question, this issue. So I repeat that. And then I give the homiletical idea, the HI, the MI, the big idea, whatever it is. I state it. In my experience, I would say probably 20% of sermons I hear, actually, the speaker actually states the main idea. I don't know what it is. Would you say it's about the same for you? Where they actually state the main idea in one sentence? Most preachers do not do this. And that's one of the reasons why people walk out with these little question marks over their heads. You know, you don't want them to do that. Repeat the main points that might be already wrapped up in your main idea. You know, today we say we should speak to non-Christians graciously and wisely. Well, you've already given the main points by saying it that way. And then drive it home with a clear story. Make sure your story is illustrating the main idea and that. So people say, oh, I see a good example. Actually, where to put this in practice. Yeah, thanks for the story. It's not just a story. You're showing me in your story what this looks like in real life. All right? So here's the last one. The last thing is use movement. Let's say you're going to, in Revelation, he is the Alpha and Omega, the A and the Z, the beginning and the end. All right? How would you actually do that? Jesus is the Alpha and the Omega. Jesus is the beginning and the end, the first and the last. How does it look to you when I do it that way?
Backwards.
It looks backwards, right? What's the point here? Can you get the point here?
Gesture backwards.
For clarity. There it is. Gesture backwards for clarity. All right? Are you ready to do it with me? Let's do it. Let's say the verse, and we're going to gesture three times. All right? Let's do it. He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the A and the Z, the beginning and the end. How does that feel for you? It feels a little strange, doesn't it? Because you're used to thinking left or right, but I'm telling you, do it right to left. So let's do the three points. Let's say the sermon has 3 points. Okay, gesture for me, Peng, the 3 points of the sermon. Give me point one, then point two, and point three. Okay. Where's point three? Point three is way over at the wall. Yeah. You know, today I want to give you the ABCs of salvation. The ABCs. In this sermon, we're going to talk about two elements, okay? First, we're going to talk about, let's say, the theology, and then secondly, the application. Help me with this gesture-wise, okay? First, we're going to talk about the theology. Then we're going to talk about the application. Okay, as I'm looking at you, it looks just fine to me to do theology with your right hand and application with your left hand. But it doesn't feel that comfortable to you because you're actually doing it backwards. I'll see oftentimes preachers who've been preaching for 50 years not catch this point, that you really want to gesture in the way that the people, no one's going to say, hey, he just did that backwards. I guarantee you, no one's going to do that. They're going to say, wow, that looks really natural to me, because you're just talking about the 1, 2, 3s. So practice that. Clarity in the body, use full sentence main points. Use transitions, use illustrations. We already talked about that. Use movement, repeat the subject, keep these things in mind, and you will actually be a very clear speaker. But it does take a little bit of practice to be able to do these things, and so that they kind of feel natural. For me, doing things, when I don't do things backwards and I'm speaking, it feels very unnatural. For me to say, the beginning and the end, it feels so unnatural to me because I've been programmed myself after many years of doing it from the speaker's standpoint. But I've never had anybody come to me and say, Pastor Rick, did you know your gestures were backwards? Because it doesn't look backwards to them. All right, these are a few things that could be helpful for us in actually being clear in our preaching and actually also our teaching as well, and I hope you'll keep them in mind.